Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
It's almost here. It's just over a week to go until the start of the Winter Olympics taking place in Pyeongchang in South Korea. It will be an amazing spectacle with some of the greatest sports stars on the planet. And of course, we have to cover the winter sports on the Best in the World with Richard Parr. And we should be having some amazing guests for you over the next few weeks. And I've got a brilliant guest for you on today's podcast. It is with the reigning 2014 Olympic champion in downhill skiing, Dominic Gissen, joins us on the program. You might remember she ended up sharing the gold medal with Tina Maze in Sochi 4 years ago. An incredible story. She suffered so many injuries throughout her career, but finally managed to take gold right towards the end. It's a really fun conversation with Dominique. We cover a whole range of topics, talking about why she's now studying physics. Yes, physics. How she has learnt how to fly. I know, this is a very impressive lady. And we talk about what she changed in her mindset going into those 2014 Olympics. Lots of really good information and things that we can use to improve our everyday life in this week's episode of The Best in the World with Richard Parr. One of the cool things that we've done recently is open a Facebook group. It's very simple. It's called Best in the World. I'll put a link to it on the show notes page for you. Please come and join it. Join in the conversation. We're going to be talking a whole range of things. A lot of things related to what we do here on the podcast. We'll be talking about sports, high performance, nutrition, mindset, training, morning routine. We'll cover all of those things, but I'm sure we're going to cover lots of topics related to the Winter Olympics. So if you want a place to go to discuss your favorite moments, what you're looking forward to, some of the highs and lows of what will be an incredible games, please come and join that Facebook group, Best in the World. It's on Facebook. I'll put a link to it. And it will be awesome to have you as part of our community. All right, let's get to the interview with the Olympic champion in downhill skiing, Dominic Gissen.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Dominic Gissen, 2014 Olympic downhill skiing champion. Welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. It's so great to speak to you. As I mentioned there, it's a few years ago now since you became Olympic champion, and I know since then you've retired. So why don't we just begin by you catching up with us with what you've been up to in the last few years, please?
Well, I still skied until 2015, the springtime. I did the world champs in Beaver Creek. It was, was unlucky again, got injured and then had to hurry up with the preparation and unfortunately didn't medal, but still it was a great, and final year of my career. I got twice Swiss champion at last, and then I retired from active ski racing. So I'm a student now at ETH Zurich studying physics in my, I think it's called the senior year. So in my third year of the bachelor, and yeah, working on that, and it's a really new life, new challenges, lots to do, and have a lot of side projects, so it never gets boring.
Why physics?
Yeah. Well, physics, everybody keeps asking me that. It's a pretty special study, I guess. But I always loved it. I always loved numbers. So it was always something I was really looking forward to study this. I already knew as a kid that I wanted to do it. And then when the day came and I retired from ski racing and I knew I wanted to do my studies, I just picked physics, and happens to be that one of the best universities for physics is in Switzerland, and that's where I'm studying at right now.
That's helpful. And so physics, you're studying physics. Have you thought about what you would do after you completed your studies with physics?
Well, if possible, I would love to just go somewhere in where I could like unite the different worlds that fascinate me. I'm also a pilot, still working on my commercial pilot license, which should be finished in the next 2-3 months. I've done all the theoretical exams, and now, yeah, working on my final practical exam. And yeah, so physics, flying, sports, it's a lot about energy, a lot about forces, and I would love to just get into a field where I could, yeah, try to... let all these experiences get in touch with each other, and then hopefully do a good job.
That's amazing. So you mentioned being a pilot there, and you were part of the Swiss Air Force. Is that true?
No, it's a little different.
Okay.
It was distorted by media a bit. I did the selections for the Swiss Air Force when I was young. So when I was 16 years old, I applied to become a military pilot, but in Switzerland a lot of people want to do that, like probably in all countries all over the world. So you have to pass a selection, and I passed several steps of the selection, but then got injured again and got kicked out of military service because my knees were pretty bad back then. And that's how I got into flying, and as soon as I started to earn money with skiing, I knew how to spend the money, and I started to do my private pilot license, and later on continued the formation with my commercial pilot license, yes.
Fantastic. Any scary moments?
Oh, fortunately not too many. There was one when I was just at the beginning of my education, when we misread the meteor information, and I got close to a thunderstorm, and it was not very comfortable with a small plane like that. So, I mean, I've always been cautious when I fly, and that experience made me even more cautious. So nowadays, I'd rather stay home than go fly when the weather is not 100% perfect.
That makes sense. And we love talking about process on The Best in the World. And is there anything that you've been able to take from your career and life as a skier that helped you get your license, that helped you when you were learning to fly?
I think so. I mean, there's so many things you learn when you're an athlete. And it's maybe just not the things that are very obvious. I mean, nobody is too interested in how to do a perfect downhill turn when you fly, right? But there's other things that you can rely on, like do strategical plan on how to learn, like how to be at your best in the right moment and stuff like that. So just having a structure, having rituals to make you really perform at your best level, that's really something that, yeah, skiing helped me to learn, and something that I can apply now when I fly, but also in my studies, for sure.
You mentioned injuries there, and you mentioned that that's why you can join the Swiss Air Force. So how could you have knees that were not good enough for the Swiss Air Force, but were able to help you become an Olympic champion?
Well, I mean, that's two different timescales we talk about. When I was 14 years old, I got my very first hard injury on my knees. I tore my ACL. It's a pretty common injury in skiing, but I was 14 years old, so very young. Mm. And then from then on, it was pretty tough to just, you know, get back. I had a lot of complications on that first injury. Another three surgeries because, yes, things went wrong with the first surgery. So when I was, by the age of, I was 17, I was really a mess. I mean, my knees were a real mess. I had already four knee surgeries. And everybody told me, you can't forget about skiing. And I got kicked out of the military service, which was super obvious back then. I mean, my knees were really bad. And then fortunately, I got a new doctor and we were able to figure things out. But it took another 3 years until I made the breakthrough in the World Cup. Yeah.
And how would that affect you mentally? Because if you're having torn ACL, so, you know, skiing for a lot of people can be a kind of a scary process. And once you've been through those injuries, how do you kind of like block that from your mind?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's not so easy. We talk about mental stuff in sports everywhere. Everywhere it's the same. Like, how do I win? How not to get scared of losing and stuff like that. And there are the obvious mental things which are important when you're an athlete. But in skiing, there is another dimension, and that's the many injuries. We have 35% of the athletes who are injured every year, so it's something really common. And when you're injured, it hurts, and your body is getting on a level, or your mind is getting on a level where it's more instinct than I would not. I mean, it's mental strength on another level because you fight your instincts. Nobody wants to get hurt. I mean, if we wouldn't adapt to pain, we still would burn ourselves on the oven every day, right?
Mm.
So that's a level which is additional in, for example, skiing compared to, let's say, tennis, where obviously, I mean, I never seen an athlete getting hurt because he hits the ball in the out. Mm. It doesn't hurt. It makes you lose, but it doesn't make you go to the hospital. But in skiing, if you hit the ball in the out, let's say you do a big mistake, almost always leads to a crash. And a crash, especially in the speed disciplines, always almost leads to an injury, which is just, yeah, obviously a big pain, yeah. And then you work on this instinct level, and that's much harder than just work on, let's say, a normal mental level, I'd say.
What's the scariest crash you've had, Dominique?
Oh, I had many scary crashes. I guess the scariest was in Treviso in 2007 in the training, where I hit the fence at 120K. And the worst thing was I didn't hit it immediately, like I hit it in Schladming. That was also very bad. But I approached it for several seconds closer and closer, and I knew I'm going to crash. And I knew I could not slow down. And that was even worse because I had this moment where I saw the fence and I knew I can't avoid it. But it still took some seconds until I was in the fence, which was pretty scary. Mm.
Did you get a lot of injuries from that one?
Well, I did. I had just a torn ACL and a left inner ligament in my left knee. So it was just my left knee who got really badly hurt, and the right knee was also a little bruised and stuff, but it holds, so that was a good thing.
Oh, crikey. Dominique, do you remember the first time you put on skis?
I do. It's my first childhood memory. I was 1.5 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I don't really remember everything of it, but I remember that there was a hill, and I wanted to go super fast down the hill. And there was a bump which slowed me down, you know, because little kids, they cannot slow down so well. And I remember the feeling that I wanted to get over that hill, you know, that slowed me down. But I never made it, of course. But this, I think this chasing for speed was there already at a very young age.
And I guess at that age, you don't know that the injuries are there, do you? It doesn't matter if you fall, you just care about going fast,
That's
I guess.
That's true.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
We'll be back with Dominique in just a moment. Now, I mentioned earlier how we're trying to build a community on Facebook with our Facebook group. Of course, we've got the Best in the World with Richard Parr Facebook page. There's also the Sportacino Facebook page. We're across all forms of social media, but we're also creating a community at Patreon. Patreon is a place where creators can earn some money so they can continue to do what they love. And I love speaking to world and Olympic champions to learn things that we can use in our everyday lives to get a little bit better. And I hope you enjoy these conversations too. And if you do, I would really love it if you would help support us. And you can do that from as little as $5 a month. And we've got various different tiers. And the more you put towards our program at Patreon, the more you get out of it. And you'll see that there's different tiers. All you've got to do is go to patreon.com/bestintheworld. It would really mean a lot to me if you can continue to support this podcast and we can continue to do it for you. And it's a place where you can meet other like-minded souls, people who are interested from learning from the very best. Please go and check it out. It's patreon.com/bestintheworld. We also put a few exclusive posts and a little bit of information which you can't really get anywhere else online, only at patreon.com/bestintheworld. All right, let's return to the conversation with the Olympic downhill skiing champion from 2014, Dominique Gissen.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
So during your childhood, and we mentioned about potentially being a pilot and everything like that, when did you realize that you were good at skiing? When did you realize that you could take this up as a profession?
I mean, it was always a dream. And then in 1996, I won the Ovo Grand Prix Finals, which was the biggest kids race back then. And Vreni Schneider was like the person who handed me over the medal. And this moment, person that you knew from TV, which is your childhood hero, just comes over at your place and just hands you the medal, it was a magical moment. And I suddenly realized this is real. I mean, this is a real person giving me a real medal, and this dream can be real. You know, it was more suddenly than a fantasy. It was really a goal. And I mean, I never made it quite as far as Franny did, but I made it quite far.
Yeah, you definitely did. What did you look up to them about? What was it that inspired you?
I mean, she was just the perfect skier, right? And I just loved the sport. It was something that ignited the spark in me, and this fire is still burning. I still ski so much. Whenever I can go on skis, I'm on skis. And then you watch the races on TV, and this woman, she wins just everything, and she has this particular style, and I just loved it, and I wanted to ski like her, and I wanted to just race the best hills in the world, and that's what I did then.
So is it going to be tough watching the 2018 Winter Olympics rather than being there?
I will be there, but on the other side of the camera, so I will work for Swiss TV.
Oh, fantastic.
I think it's going to be a great experience. The first year after my retirement was really tough. I barely couldn't watch the races because I just felt like I should be there and I should race. And then things changed. My sister started to do fast speed events, and she got really good. And I started to just coach her a little bit. And then was a lot of fun for me. And especially it was just amazing to pass on the knowledge, you know, the knowledge that you have built up over all these years. And with this, everything in my mind changed. And last year at the Home World Champs in St. Moritz, I felt completely okay with not racing. I was just in a completely new role, and it was very nice.
What's the age gap between you and your sister?
Almost 9 years. So we're a really different generation, yeah.
Yeah, so she gets the benefit of all of that knowledge that you've got. How far do you think she can go?
Oh, she can go far. We will see. I mean, she has really all the skills necessary to do a nice career. She's a great technician. She has all the feelings that have to be there for the speed disciplines. And I think there will be great things coming for her.
Fantastic. And we're going to get on
as long as she stays healthy, but we will try everything to make her stay healthy.
Yeah, let's just talk about that. Injuries aside, not injuries aside, but crashes aside, is there anything that young skiers can do to try and avoid the injuries? Is there anything that they can do perhaps in their training, with their nutrition? Is there anything, looking back, that you've gone, all right, I could have avoided some things had I not done it? Crashes are going to be crashes, but is there anything else to do?
Yeah, crashes are going to be crashes. I mean, skiing will always be a sport where you get injured, and you have to kind of live with that. But there's still a lot you can do. I think a healthy environment is important, like to train well, to have a strong body. You can avoid a lot of injuries. You can avoid injuries by eating well, because what you eat is what you are, right? So just having a strong body. And then what I try to do with Michelle especially, and also with other young racers that I try to give some advice, is just try to take away the pressure on the speed side. I think it's not good to go head first in a downhill race, especially if you're not at the level you should be. And I think especially on the speed, well, I said a lot especially now, but just on the speed side, you want to make sure to build up something very slowly and nicely. Maybe a good example is Michaela Schifrin, how she built it up. Just take one race at a time and just try to get better step by step, instead of just crushing in there with your head first and then ending up in a hospital again. So really get the pressure away from the young speed athletes. Like, let them learn, let them get the experience, get the strength needed to be safe and fast.
You said you are what you eat there, Dominique. What do you eat?
Well, I think as a winter athlete, you probably don't have to be as strict in your diet like a summer athlete, because there's not only bad things about a little bit of fat, especially when it's cold, but you want to make sure to eat healthy. I mean, you need a very balanced diet, eat a lot of proteins as a force athlete is always crucial. And there also, if you don't like meat or if you just get sick of it, just make sure that you get your proteins. You can drink shakes. There's a lot of possibilities. Be sure to have enough vitamins, especially as a winter athlete. You're always in the cold. You're always outside. The elements are playing with you, so you want to make sure that you can fight them, so you're not sick all the time. And I think just be balanced. There's nothing bad about a little bit of chocolate, especially when you're Swiss. It's almost unnecessary, you know. But yeah, there's a difference between a little bit of chocolate and two bars a day. So just make sure that you eat what your body tells you to eat, and not what your mind tells you to eat. That's pretty much what I do.
Okay, so during your career, while you were training, just give us an idea of what would be a typical daily meal plan. What would roughly you be eating for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Well, breakfast would always be crucial, because I was not a person who could eat a lot between races or before races. So I always ate a lot of Birchel muesli, just yogurt and cereals. And then if I felt like, maybe some eggs in the morning.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And then some whole bread or something like that. Just a really nice breakfast. Then for lunch at the race day, I would not eat too much. Maybe some energy bars or some protein shakes. Just something really light on your stomach where you should not get too much energy for processing your nutrition. So just something, already processed and tailored for sports. And then in the evening, I would just eat what's still needed to be eaten, depending on how the day went, how much energy I left. So in the evening, probably some meat or some fish and a lot of vegetables, salads, stuff like that. I would not eat too many carbs because we didn't eat too many, something like that. But it's individual. I think everybody has different needs. And I really believe in listening to your body, and your body will tell you what he needs and what he's craving for.
Did anyone help you with this, Dominique, or is it just something you learned about throughout your career?
We had some nutrition specialists helping us out, just giving us some advice. Also the people I worked with from Winforce who were doing my protein shakes, they would always make sure that the diet was balanced and that we would get the right stuff at the right time.
So we mentioned the Olympics there, and obviously you were at the 2010 Games. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was tough. I got injured 4 weeks before the Games and really wanted to just press those Games in. I was at a really good level, and I knew that it was possible to do a medal, and then I got injured and I went to the surgery, and I think 3 days after surgery I was back in the gym, which tried to make it happen. And then 10 days after the surgery I was back on a World Cup race, and it went quite okay. And when I flew to Canada, of course the knee got swollen again, and then we just tried to make it happen. And then the Games came, and the slope was super tough. It was super icy, bumpy, probably the toughest course I've ever been there, I've ever raced. And then, I don't know. I really put my heart in there. I just raced on the limit, and I was in a medal spot, and then I crashed on the final jump. And it was just devastating because I put all on the line. I gave it all. It was so tough to get the courage needed for such a tough race 4 weeks after a surgery, and I did it. I did a great run, and then I crashed again, and I was like, can't be right. This must be a joke. So that was probably the toughest moment of my career, where I really wanted to just give up. I was like, there's nothing left. There's nothing left I could add. Like, I gave it all, and that's how it ended up. And it was just too much to handle, really. Yeah.
How long were you in this kind of upset? How long did it affect you before you were able to think?
Fortunately, not too long. It was just Dominique style. The more somebody beats me up, the more I fight back, I guess. When I got back to Switzerland, I was just, okay, well, that's it. You better handle it, or you really give up. You do something else. And I knew I couldn't, because I love this sport so much. Mm. So I went back on the course, and yeah.
Were you able to look back on that and pick out positives from it that would later help you in 2014? Or can you only really do that now?
Probably not. I mean, it was just the biggest deception of my career. And the only thing I tried to do before going to Sochi was to try to not have too many bad emotions about the Olympics, you know, because it was just such a deception the last time. And I think what I really did was just to blend it out and just take it as a race and not get too distracted by all the Olympic thing going on, which is huge, you know. It's like crazy. Vancouver was overwhelming for me when I got there, and the opening ceremony and everything. So when I was in Sochi, I really didn't join any of those things. I didn't go to the opening ceremony. I didn't go to all the special events. I just went there to race my race.
And of course, in Sochi, you became an Olympic champion. You were able to kind of forget about 2010 and walk away with a gold medal. And I saw a video recently, I think you did it with the Olympic Channel, just talking about that race, talking about when you became the champion. And one of the things you mentioned there was that the first three turns were arguably the best you'd ever done. Were you what some people call in the zone, and what made them so good? What happened then?
Absolutely. I mean, in 2012, I got another injury without even crashing, and to get back from that one was super tough on my mind, especially because before I always had these huge crashes, and I knew, okay, you did something wrong, and that's what happened. But in 2012, I got a season-ending injury by not even doing anything wrong. And that was hard. I mean, how could you convince your body to keep doing something that you would get injured at all the time when you didn't even do something wrong? So it took a lot of energy from me. And coming to the games, we tried just every mental trick possible to get me back into a state where I would be able to race at my best and not race at 80%, which I did the 2 years before. And I knew it was coming. I mean, every turn I got better, I got stronger. And in Sochi, it really, something clicked in my mind. And when I was at the start, I felt super sick because it took so much energy to get in this zone.
Oh, wow.
But I knew I was there. I really knew it. I mean, on the start gate, it's going to happen. And then it was just these three turns, and I was fully in. And I was, I mean, I remember everything, but in the moment, I was just in the moment. I could not think. It was just quiet. And then I got down, and I took a second when I crossed the finish line just to think for myself, was it all you had? Like, did you give your best? And the answer was yes. And then I looked at the leaderboard, and I was like, okay, it's green. That's a good thing. So, yeah, I mean, I knew that Fabienne was doing a great run. And so I knew when I was faster than her, it's probably going to be a medal.
Oh, amazing. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. But you mentioned there you tried every type of mental trick. Now, were there any that particularly worked for you? And can you explain them at all?
Well, the one that worked in Sochi was really to get back in little steps. And we did it by just doing one single turn perfectly without any margin, without slowing down, without any, you know, risk management. And then 2 weeks later, two, and so on and so on. And 1 week before Sochi, I felt it was like 23 turns on 100% and one on maybe not 100%. And then in Sochi, I just made the 24 turns, yeah.
So you crossed the line, you took the moment to think about it, you saw the time, you're in the lead. How tough was that next hour?
It was a tough one. I just remember that I stood there in the leaderboard And I mean, all I could see was like if the light was red or green. I didn't even see the timings anymore. And it was just a lot of nerve-wracking moments, everybody attacking my time. And yeah, it was crazy, for sure.
Did you
think... And it was a super close race, right?
It was very close. Did you think you had lost when Tina crossed the line?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was green. And I was like, yeah, well, second, that's okay. You know, I mean, I would have been super happy with a medal too. And then I looked again and I saw 0-0-0. I was like, that's a good thing, right? And then, yeah, we just freaked out. It was amazing, yeah.
Because you both got a gold medal. Do you wish it was just you on top of the podium, or did you not care about that?
Not at all. It was even more special. I mean, Tina is such a good friend, and we were already friends back then, and she's a legend of our sport, you know? And for me, it was an honor to share this gold with her. And, I mean, you almost never have that in our sport, that you can share exactly the same feelings in exactly the same moment with somebody. And it sure bonded us. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's normally only bronze when people have to share, isn't it? So it's really unique.
Yes, it was, for sure.
So how did it then feel to be an Olympic champion? Did your life change at all?
I don't think so. I hope not. I mean, I think it was just something that paid back a lot of the crazy and hard stuff. And it just made me get in peace with my story a lot. You know, I guess I'm much more at rest now, and I can look back at in a more relaxed way to all what happened. It sure made sure that I would never be bitter about my career. I mean, it just how it was, and it was perfect that way, you know. And it sure made me feel, in peace with my story.
You mentioned earlier that you retired not long afterwards. Had you not got that gold, let's say you almost missed out on a medal, for example, came fourth, hypothetically, would you then have been bitter about the rest of your career because of the injuries?
I hope not, but you can never tell. I mean, it was really tense, and I really poured my heart out, and of course it would have been hard to accept that I never got there. Of course it would have been, but I think I'm also a person who always gets back up and just gets another defeat and finds another challenge. So I hope not, but I cannot say for sure. I mean, if you work for so hard on something for so long, and then it's just never meant to be, it's tough. It's just tough.
And you mentioned what you're up to now, and one of the things that I don't think you mentioned is you also have a book called Making It Happen, and you also do a talk on the same thing. How's that been going?
Well, it was amazing to come back from Sochi and have all these people freak out about that victory. And I realized it's not only this victory, it's really my story that kind of touched people. And maybe not even because of me, but much more because it's just such a Cinderella story, right? I mean, if you would make a movie about it, everybody would say, this is so unreal. I mean, this is way too much a happy end. Something like that never happens in real life. But it did happen in real life. So I had strangers crying in my arms because they were so touched by this story. And then I had a lot of people asking me to give this story on and to help motivate other people who are in a tough time just to hang in there and believe that finally the turnaround will come. And it was overwhelming. I mean, I got 1,000 mails every day. Wow. And then my mental coach really helped me to handle this by doing this professional speech together where we really try to get my experience into a form where everybody can profit from it. and it's a blast. I mean, for me, it's really something I like to do, just to give on the experience, to give on everything I learned. And the demand was so big that we even did a book, and it's just something that gives me a lot, and it's super cool to do, and I love to be on tour with Chris. It's really something special.
Absolutely inspiring, Dominique. Well, I think that's the perfect way to end this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for being on the program. Before you go, why don't you just let us know, Dominique, where we can continue to follow your journey online, or where we can buy the book, or a social media link or something like that, please.
Well, it's super easy. You just go on my website, dominiquegiesin.ch, and you find everything there, links to my social media accounts, the link to the book, to the tour. So, everything's online.
Wonderful. Well, I'll make sure we put a link to that when we put this podcast out. Thank you so much for being on the program, and thank you for being the best in the world.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
A wonderful chat there with Dominique. Let's stay on the skiing theme for just a moment. If you enjoyed that conversation or want to learn from more skiing Olympic and world champions, then I've spoke to a few of them on this podcast before on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Go back and listen to episode 84 with Mario Matt. Mario won Olympic gold in the men's slalom at the 2014 Sochi Olympics, where he was 34 years of age, becoming the oldest person to win an alpine skiing gold. Also, in episode 82, I spoke to Julia Mancuso. Julia won Olympic giant slalom gold in 2006, and you'll never guess what, she ate Pop-Tarts and slept in an RV before she won that medal. It's an incredible story. Go back and listen to episode 82 with Julia Mancuso. We've also had cross-country skiing sensation Charlotte Kalla. Charlotte's won golds at 2010 and 2014 Olympics, and was a real pleasure to speak to. Go back and listen to that. Plus, I've spoken to a few speed skaters. I've spoken to snowboarders. I've spoken to winter ice hockey stars. They are all available on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. It's on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Acast, at sportacino.com, and pretty much at any podcasting platform that you know about. And in fact, if you go to your podcasting platform and it doesn't have The Best in the World with Richard Parr, please let me know, because we should be there. All right, that is it for this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. Enjoy the Winter Olympics. Join in the conversation with our new Best in the World Facebook group. Please support us at Patreon, patreon.com/bestintheworld. Enjoy the Winter Olympics. And I'm going to have another Winter Olympian, another Winter Olympics gold medalist on next week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. It'll be out next Thursday. Do not miss it. Goodbye for now.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.